Testing, how we doing? All right. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Scuba and the Rye Guy.
Rye Guy it is.
What's going on, man?
Nothing much. Just chilling, busy as always at work.
Yeah.
Rotating through the games, and that's pretty much it.
That's it. It's been pretty quiet. I've been doing a lot of work, too, on the Airsoft stuff, did some game stuff. Alrighty, so I guess we'll jump right in. Clap, clap. Go right into the movie reviews. So it's been like 2 weeks. So you know, things happen, life happens. You know, sometimes you know things come up. We got to do what we got to do. But didn't stop you from catching some movies.
No. It could be a thunderstorm, hail, bomb drop. I'll be the only person at the cinema watching that movie, eating my popcorn.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what have we got? What All movies right, have we got this week?
The two movies I watched was Men in Black International and Toy Story 4.
Toy Story 4. That one seemed... I wasn't expecting that, to be honest. I really was not expecting another Toy Story after the way Toy Story 3 ended.
A lot of people, when it was first announced that they were doing another Toy Story, everybody had the same thought like you. Like, the three films wrapped up a perfect trilogy.
Yes.
But after thinking about it, like, that was the trilogy with Andy. So there was still enough story to tell because the toys, spoiler alert for three, but it's been out for a few years. The toys got, Andy gave the toys to a kid named Bonnie. So it picks up with the toys with Bonnie.
Ah.
So there is still more story to tell. And I can tell you this, going into this movie, I was nervous because, like you, I was like, what else can they do? Are you going to ruin the perfect trilogy? Or are you just going to actually add more to it?
So, which did they do? Did they add, or?
Coming out of the movie, I had to sit back and think about it for a second. But then, I usually wait over the weekend to post my review, but I posted my review right away because it was a perfect, amazing film.
Yeah, I noticed that. I read the review, and it had a five.
Yes.
It's like, how many fives have you had this year?
The rare five. The only other five they've given this year was for Avengers Endgame.
Okay.
But that one got a five because of the culmination of what that did over 11 years. Oh. So that had a lot of wrapping up story, had a lot of emotions. It gave a fervent ride. But going to Toy Story 4, I had to contemplate whether or not I would give it a rating. Whenever I give it a perfect rating, I literally comb through the story in my head and see if there's any flaws. And this fourth movie represents how amazing this series is and how it has done something that no other series has ever done and made four perfect films.
Cool. So it's a quartet now.
Yeah, a quartet.
So, and any standout characters aside from the ones we've grown up with?
Because
I think the first Toy Story came out in what, late 90s?
About mid-90s. I was mid-90s? In middle school.
Yeah, so. I was high school at the time.
Yeah.
I feel old. All right. We won't dwell on that. So it's like the first movie came out, and then it's like it's a generational thing at this point.
Oh, yeah. It tugs at my heart. Just because, like you said, it's a generational thing, and like each movie, you grew up parallel with the film. So each movie represented some aspect in your life.
Or adolescence in general.
Kid, adolescence, going off to college from high school, passing on your stuff to another kid. And then this one deals with the idea of what is the purpose of a toy? Like, what is your reason to be? And pulling from the tagline from a review is a toy's purpose for a lifetime. So basically, what this movie focused on is on Woody. Like, you have all the characters, but it is Woody's story.
Mm-hmm.
And he's at a point to where he has a existential crisis. He really doesn't know his purpose. And with the introduction of the new character Forky, it throws a wrench and creates a crossroads not only for him, for the rest of the characters to find out what their purpose are.
Okay.
And from Woody to Buzz to the reintroduction of Bo Peep and all the other characters, new and old, you get to see the truth of what a toy goes through when it has to deal with the fact that kids will just not care after a certain point. So on top of that fact where it plays to the kids, it also plays to adults to understanding what is purpose, what is your reason mm-hmm. for things and doing things and going from A to B. And it gives a good image of you get to a point to where you have to make choices to do one thing or another.
Okay.
So just like any great Pixar movie, it has layered meanings, has deep characterizations. They do things in the movie where you might expect something, like a typical trope, a typical villain, a typical comedic character, and it goes left field in a way that you don't expect things coming. Emotional rise, dramatic moments, comedic timing, everything is on point in this movie.
Nice.
And then
nice.
The reason, one of the reasons why it got a perfect score is because within the first 5 minutes, you're going to cry. And if
what?
It can hook you that quick, and then also end the movie on a good cry, that's a emotional journey right there.
Like a good cry, like the end of Toy Story 3, when realizing the toys
oh, yes.
have a home, or seeing the look on Andy's face as he finds Woody in the box, and the girls reciting the lines.
Oh, yeah. And it's a good example of perfect writing. They know the characters, they care about the characters, and like you said, when they said they are developing a Toy Story 4, they took their time. They didn't develop the story just because they want another sequel. They developed it because they knew there was another story to tell.
Okay. So any new standout characters?
Forky.
Who's Forky?
Forky is the toy that Bonnie actually creates out of a spork. And like he gives the perfect idea of what is purpose, because the whole movie he is self-aware that he is a spork, so his purpose is for eating, and he doesn't like the idea of being nothing other than that. So in the movie he starts to understand his true purpose.
Okay.
Which layers through all the other characters too.
All right. Any new standout voices that have come in there?
Because
I'm tapping on a door. I know which door I'm tapping on, because this is his year for some
Keanu
reason.
Keanu Reeves as I am forgetting the name right now.
I know it's like a Canadian.
It's a Canadian evil Knievel. But Keanu Reeves' character is a standout. He's just so funny in the movie. It's it is so hilarious.
Yeah, I watched part of the post that Chris Evans posted on Twitter, and saying, you know, if it was 2 hours of watching Keanu Reeves in the sound booth just recording audio, it's like it would be totally worth it.
And just like all the other characters, he has an amazing personality, but he also has a dark past because of the kind of toy he is. And it mimics a typical evil Knievel toy back in the 70s, where you see the ads and it's supposed to do all these amazing things, and what happens?
It don't.
So guess what the kids do? They throw it away. And that haunts him for most of the movie, because it feels like he needs a place in the world. But along with him, you have Key and Peele that voice Ducky and Bunny, and the trailers give it off like they will like turn you off in the movie, but they make you laugh so much.
That's good.
In the movie, they're perfect comedic timing with things, and then being paired with Buzz gives that black and white kind of feeling with two different kind of characters. You have a stout Buzz and you have these funny little stuffed animals, so their clashing of personalities creates a lot of the funniness in the movie.
Okay, but it's not like over the top.
Oh no, Keanu Reeves' character's name is Duke Kaboom.
Duke.
Let that moisten on your head while he models and poses for you.
Yeah.
And another reason why I got a perfect score, because they didn't jump at the typical tropes and cliche. Like when you are introduced to the House of Horrors with Gabby in the antique store, you think she's going to be a typical villain. But then you come to find out that she has a reason why she acts the way she does.
Okay.
And she has a reason why she wants Woody. And when you go see this movie, you'll understand how tight and amazing the script is, the visual direction, the cinematography, the characters.
I mean, the technology-wise, yeah, they have technology. Come a long way. I remember I was seeing a thing where they were comparing the dog from the first one.
Yeah.
Sid's dog. And, you know, that was really impressive. But then they were pointing out the fur in the dog and then seeing how when they did, like, Monsters, Inc., they revamped how fur was done. When they got into Brave, Brave was Pixar, right?
Yes, Brave, Coco.
Coco, all these ones where you have this dynamic, and it's like, you could see that tech really kind of improved over the years.
The contrast of the colorful carnival with the antique store and with them traveling in the RV.
No, keep going.
And it's just, like you said, amazing the technology, the way it immerses you, visuals through the emotion. But yeah, Toy Story 4 was an amazing experience. Where it fits in with the other three as which one's my favorite or not, I can't really say.
Yeah.
Because when you come out of this movie and you think about it, you understand what makes great film. When you see all four movies, it's an evolution of the characters.
Okay.
So even though it's a sequel, you actually see how the characters grow from film to film.
That's good. I was just checking. All right, so we have that. And we have all that's going on with that goodness. Definitely probably going to have to go watch it or at least get it when it comes out.
Oh, yes. You definitely will enjoy it.
I've enjoyed all the other ones so far. I enjoyed the dynamic between Tom Hanks and Tim Allen and all of them. I'm curious because, you know, I'm judging all of it on previews, and I haven't been disappointed by House of Mouse yet.
I can tell you this, the trailers don't do the film justice because they just introduce you to what's going on. There is a lot more going on.
So this is just the taste of the chocolate. They got the rest of the bar in the back. Yeah. Oh, okay. Because one of the things I saw from that was like with Bo Peep, and I had totally forgotten she disappeared.
Oh, yeah. They explain what happens. They explain exactly what happens.
She's kind of got this Tomb Raider vibe to her.
They do a great job at personifying a strong female character without badgering you over the head over the fact. They just like this. She's just a strong character.
Okay.
Who's female. They don't do like some films where they badger you over with a message of any kind. This is a strong character. So they show you that strong female character without forcing it down your throat.
Oh, okay. Well, that should be good.
But yeah. Toy Story 4 is a good representation of writing and how you do a sequel, whereas the other movie I saw is the complete opposite.
All right, so what was the other movie you went and watched?
The other not-so-good movie was MIB International.
Okay, so this is... Now, I took it as this is a continuation, but... A lot of people said that this is actually a reboot of the franchise.
It is a soft reboot of the franchise because it focuses on two new characters, but it takes place after the original three.
Okay.
So it's still in the same world, but it is a reboot with new characters.
All right. So it looks like we have Valkyrie and Thor paired up again. To do another movie.
Yes.
This time with Zeus. And it seemed by the trailers, it looks like they did a lot of retreading of what made the first Men in Black so unique as a film.
Let me be Captain Obvious and say you stated it so perfectly.
I haven't even watched the movie yet.
I thought Dark Phoenix was a bad sequel. And then I saw Men in Black International.
Oh, man.
So when I saw Men in Black International and I came out of it, it made me just want to choke a chicken and throw it across the room, because this movie is generic 101 cookie cutter. All they did was take the plot of the first movie and just try to retread it with new characters, with a bad script, a lack of direction, and every cliche trope that you can find in an action or spy international film.
Man.
And what makes it so hurtful even more is the fact that with Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson, they have great chemistry.
Yeah, they
and
do.
They talk, and the dialogue between them, even though it's completely bland and stupid, they make the dialogue work because of their personalities. And because of that, it makes the film even worse because everything around them is so bad.
What about Liam Neeson's character?
He's Liam Neeson.
He's
that's nothing. It's just.
He's transcended. We don't refer to him by his roles because his roles are so iconic. It's just Liam Neeson.
It's just Liam Neeson, and it's not good. It's not good or bad. He's just there, and the movie. I don't give points off because of predictability, because I watch a lot of movies, so there's a lot of stuff that you're going to notice no matter what genre you read. But
and when the more it can be argued, I would say it's a strong argument. The more movies you watch, the more similarities you start to pick up on, especially when you watch the quote unquote classics.
Yes.
And I'm talking After Sound, right into the Advent of Color.
Yeah.
You can see and like
you.
Those felt fresh. Then you get into the last few decades, or our lifetime, so to speak. And a lot of that's there's a lot of elements you could tell. Look, these people grew up watching these films, so they incorporated it in this film that they're doing.
There, predictability will happen if you watch a lot of films, and like you said, there's a retreading of a lot of the typical outlines from past films, but. What makes a film enjoyable is even if they use the same kind of formula, you gotta at least show some effort that you want the twists, or you want certain elements to be surprising.
Okay.
Because within the first 5 minutes, you know exactly where this movie's going. You know who the villain is. You know who the good guys and the bad guys. You know exactly what's going to happen, and they don't even try to hide it. They don't even try to fight it. They
crescendo.
Nothing. You can tell that the studio was relying heavily on nostalgia, and the actor and actresses in the main role. The
headliners.
The headliners to get people, get butts in seats, and that didn't work because it made no money.
All right, so give it to me. I'm ready to take it.
Yeah.
What was the rating?
I didn't give it a very bad rating. Bad rating just because it didn't give me a headache, but it got a very low rating, 2 out of 5, which is a rental.
Okay.
So, it's a film that, like, if you watch it at home...
How would you rent it? There's no Blockbusters anymore.
Redbox.
Oh, okay.
You still can rent
it. So, I take it if it's really bad, it's wait for streaming.
Oh, yeah. If it's really bad, it would be noise on the TV.
Oh.
That's one of my ratings. If it goes
noise
further than that,
noise on the TV. Like you're talking. Hey, I gotta do laundry or clean the bathroom, and let me put this on in the background because I've got nothing else to listen to.
Noise on the TV.
Wow.
If it really gets worse,
do you have an example of what one of those would be?
In
your humble opinion,
noise on the TV would be Transformers: Age of Extinction.
Really?
Yeah, I would put that would be noise on the TV. The one after that,
last night,
it would make me fall into a seizure because of how bad it is. But I'm not gonna go there because I don't want to get mad and start screaming obscenities. So
let's roll it back and show that.
So this last 2 weekends shows a perfect example of how you can take a property and continue it and make it great within Toy Story 4, or you can just try to take the same formula and hope people are dumb enough to just buy into the glossiness and just watch just a blanket one-page thesis on a kindergarten or how to film a movie.
Wow.
So.
So any redeeming things in Men in Black?
Some of the characters are pretty cool designs.
Okay. We can go with that. We can go with that.
That's about it.
That was just about it.
Yeah. Like I said, it gives a perfect example of writing. Okay. It's all in the writing. If you can make yourself care about the characters, it doesn't matter if you have a name attached to it or if it's a well-known property.
All right, so we'll kind of, we'll do the clapper on that right there. And then we'll, so since we've been talking about that, both of these films are quote-unquote sequels, quote-unquote. Well, one of them is obviously a soft reboot, and there have been a lot of that lately. One of the things, let's kind of talk about this whole concept of a reboot. What makes a good reboot? What makes, obviously, a not-so-good reboot? And do you happen to have an example of a good reboot?
Well, first and foremost, you already heard me say it earlier, it's all in the writing. Okay. If you have a care to want to make a movie great, even if you're taking a pre-used property and showing it to a new generation, if you can make the formula, the tropes, the archetypes work, it's all in the writing. And a perfect example would be the reboot Halloween that came out last year.
Okay.
Halloween,
that is 80s era.
Yes, 80s era slasher film.
That's what gave us... I can't remember her name right now.
Jamie Lee Curtis,
Michael Myers, never wear a mask of a famous person again.
just hide the knives, people. Hide the knives.
Okay, so that one was, you're right. That was a classic set of slasher films. Went on forever, and then there was some continuations in the 90s, like H2O or late 90s. Early 2000s. So what made the new Halloween stand out? I mean, I haven't seen it, so I cannot base my opinions on what I've seen, but you're right, it is a reboot. I've seen clips. It does look very much like I'm watching this I'm watching a film that was done in the original time frame, where it's like the 80s, where it's like, you know what, this doesn't feel like it's a...
There are two things of why I used Halloween as a good example against Men in Black, because both of them were soft reboots. Both of them are sequels. And what you see is, first you start at the writing. So you have to have care in the writing on, you know the property, you love the property, and you actually want to make it work. So what they did in Halloween is, it's a continuation from the original Halloween.
Okay.
So it's like 20 years. So Mike Myers is in the insane asylum, and Jamie Lee Curtis is out there waiting in the wings for him to come back. He breaks out, and then he goes on his devilish rampage.
Okay, I just gotta think about this. Okay, the first movie came out in the 80s.
Early 80s,
right? Yeah. Let's see. That is roughly 40 years. And he was an adult when he was killing people in the 80s. So figure he's got to be like 70.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, we have to suspend reality for a film, but 70 years old and moving like that and still...
Well, he's not running and jumping, but he's still strong.
He never really ran and jump anyway. Yeah. I mean, that was one of the creepiest things about him is... He just walked. And, you know, all of those slasher films, like, it's all the people who are about to die are the ones who are running with their head screaming and hiding behind the wall of chainsaws because, you know, they can't think of a better place to hide. So, 70 years old and breaking out of the insane asylum and going on a murder spree, wow.
Yeah.
He must have some outrageous health care.
Yes. Yeah, he's got the pristine one. He must have the ones the senators have, but, you know...
Something or either he's they got a hell of a Pilates and personal trainer sections.
Yeah,
going
he's,
on.
He's definitely pumping and grinding out there,
he's
but
pretty built for a 70-year-old 70.
Yeah, but what makes it good is the fact that they evolve the characters. So Jamie Lee Curtis is not a damsel in distress. She's out there and she wants to kill Myers. So she's built, in that time gap, she has prepared to go after Mike Myers. So instead of being chased like a typical slasher, she's the hunter and he's the hunted. So they go after him.
Oh, that is a nice twist.
So he's a killer on the loose, but she's aimed at killing him. So it's a reverse cat and mouse. So what they do, they take the slasher and they evolve it, and they still use the typical slasher stuff in a horror movie, but they do it tightly, efficiently, and they catch you off guard because of the way they change up the formula. So where he's killing people here and there, he's also having to keep out of reach of Jamie Lee Curtis's character because she's out there hunting him down.
Yeah.
So.
Totally.
And point number two is the fact of the evolution, where when you do a reboot, what some reboots that are bad, they just try to take the previous formula and just hope that it works a second time. Like the case in Men in Black 2.
Okay.
Or not Men in Black, but in Men in Black International, my mistake.
Yeah, so Men in Black International. MIB International.
So that's what they tried to do, is just do that.
Okay.
A third point is know your audience. Halloween, the reboot in 2018, knew its audience, knew what they liked, and made it work for the genre it is in. They wrote it to work. They didn't try to do anything sweet or new, or try to jive with some newness just to bring in everybody, because to please everybody is to please nobody. So they focused on the core elements that made Halloween work the first time, and it made it work in the reboot. Whereas Men in Black, they tried to use different elements of multiple genres and try to plaster it against a typical adventure spy flick, hoping that people will just let the action and the explosion and the charisma of the actors to do it, and lacking of writing or direction made it hollow.
Ooh.
So
sounds horrible, 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 horrible.
And the final point I would make is that let the creative team do their job, because when you're watching Men in Black International, you can tell just by editing from certain scenes to certain scenes that people were making changes without consent of producers and directors. An article came out that stated that Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson, because of all the changes, they brought in their own people to write some of their dialogue because they didn't know what the heck was going on.
Oh, wow.
Whereas the group that was for the Halloween 2018 reboot, they worked, and they took, you know, advice from, you know, the original director, John Carpenter, on how he thinks they should do things. And they used their creative juices and worked together to make the flick.
Okay. That's good.
So.
Wow. All right, so... What are some types of films that should be rebooted, and what's kind of a good if we were to do our own reboot of a franchise or a one-off film, what would be the criteria for the material, for this narrowing down a field? Because I mean, there's a lot of stuff to pick from.
I would say first, go for something you care. Because if you go for a property and or genre or outline that you care, you're going to make sure that it works.
Okay. All right. I'm a partial to sci-fi.
Okay.
So let's kind of work our way through here. So let's pick a sci-fi one. All right. So sci-fi. I'm really passionate about sci-fi. I like science. I like tech. All right. What would be another thing to kind of use as a consideration?
Another consideration is, outside of caring about it, knowing the property that you want to readapt for for your own discretion.
Okay, are we talking like my quote unquote man cave is plastered with this particular item, or genre, or is it
this really spoke to me
because I grew up with it and I have this nostalgia?
I'll give another example: is Star Trek.
Okay.
When they rebooted Star Trek back in the mid, sometime in the 2000s, when they rebooted Star Trek for what J.J. Abrams did, he took the characters, you know, Spock and
Kirk
and
all, Sulu
and all of them,
O'Hara,
and he readapted them for the modern time. So he knew what those characters are. He made them work for the material that he wrote.
Okay.
So they were still the same characters, but they were under new skin.
Yeah, and the dynamic is what made it work. Because, I mean, this was basically a bridge crew of high-functioning geniuses.
Yeah.
Who could all finish each other's sentences and whatever. And they touched on an aspect of Star Trek that was never really addressed. And that is, because I happen to be a big Trekkie nerd, so from what I understand, the whole time that Kirk was in the Academy, we only touched on briefly in discussions after he had left the Academy.
Yes.
Like, the original Star Trek series did not started with him taking command of the Enterprise after the Enterprise has technically already been established.
Yes.
And some of these people were already there. He was the new kid, if I remember right.
Yeah.
But he never really talked about prior to that.
Yeah. That leads into my other point, is you know, you care about the property, you know what you're going to adapt, and then write your story. Because if you write your story and know what you're adapting, then it'll work. It will work.
Okay.
Perfect example is a Star Trek. Another example is what the written and directed film A Star Is Born by Bradley Cooper. That film's been adapted four times, but he made it work. He wrote his story and made the original work for his story.
Okay.
So.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
So that tells you it's a good one. If it's one that's like, oh, well.
It's been adapted four times. And then when you look at the previous three films, you see how they made the story work for that generation, work for that era.
Okay, so some stories are work really well generationally rebooted.
Yeah.
Like, this is a story that should every generation should see.
So to make a reboot work, in my opinion, is like you care about what you're writing about. You understand, you know the property or understand what the property is, and you write your story.
Okay, well, it seems like a fairly easy recipe. Why can't they get it right?
Studio influence.
Oh.
The recapturing a blockbuster.
Yeah.
They just want to make flash and bang instead of focusing actually on the story.
Yeah.
You don't have to make something deep, dramatic, or, you know, deeply moving, invoking characters, but you just got to write a good story. You got to write a script that has A, B, and C.
And you got to be able to balance the short attention span of modern American audiences with the talent of some of these people who are doing this. Because I feel bad, because some of them are talented, and you really don't see their talent unless they're in indie films and not in quote-unquote blockbusters.
Yeah. So you just have to make a good movie, because if you make a good movie, it doesn't have to be an epic course, which you can see from Toy Story 4. It's not the epic film, but it busted, you know, number one with $120 million in one weekend. So highest grossing of the franchise in one weekend. So you write a good story, people will come. See, somebody's already agreeing with me.
The horn is a
So what is your take on my 3 points?
Well, I think it works, and it makes sense, because, like, okay, we talked about, like, the in using Star Trek as an example, if, because I think that you actually have an example for both sides of that argument.
Yes.
In the first two films, the Star Trek, and then you have
Star Trek Into Darkness.
Into Darkness, right? Which, let's be honest, that was basically redoing Wrath of Khan.
It was pretty much Wrath of Khan.
I mean, there was a few differences in some of the elements, but it was Wrath of Khan.
Yes.
And it was struck me as kind of, it was fascinating in the sense that, you know, we have the story, we have the elements, but we didn't try to redo every part of it. We did try to change it up. Like, you compare Wrath of Khan from classic Star Trek to Wrath of this Into Darkness, it's like, oh wait, we flipped Kirk and Spock. Oh, it's like I like how you have people who interpret the characters differently or interpret the story differently, but it was, I liked how it's like they focus on elements that haven't been touched on in other interpretations of the story, because that's one of the things that strikes me as really odd. It's like, oh, we're gonna redo this film or this franchise, and we're basically gonna retell the story beat for beat like it was.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I'm sure a lot of people can argue, like, again, since sci-fi, Star Wars A New Hope, Star Wars Force Awakens. Can you not tell me that's essentially the same film, just a different coloring?
Yep. It gives a good example of, you can use the same stuff over and over. You just got to make it work with whatever story you're writing. So, like you said, Star Trek Into Darkness, they reversed the role of Captain Kirk and Spock, but it still invoked their relationship to the core.
Yes. The two of them were very, very, very close. I'm so glad they didn't try to go any further with that. I like how the third film was, let's talk about something else. And the third film had probably the one element that I was totally unexpected. And that was actual music.
Hey, you know, if you have Beastie Boys, you can destroy a galaxy.
Or level a playing field. Gotta love rock and roll.
Brass monkey. That funky monkey.
Yeah, that was actually Sabotage. Which
I know.
Which is interesting because in the first Star Trek film with Chris Pine, that was the song playing in the car as he was driving. And here it was... Again, they use it to, you know, defeat Idris Elba. It comes
full circle. I still like Brass Monkey.
Yeah.
It has a lot of funky monkeys.
But yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, I've seen several different reboots. Like, probably one of the more nostalgic ones would be, like, The Parent Trap. Which, I've seen that done in two different ways. I grew up with the original, with Hayley Mills.
Yes.
And the way they did that with the, oh, we're not going to use twins, we're going to use the same actors to play both roles. I have not watched The Departed.
The Departed is another great reboot where Martin Scorsese did a reimaging of a Chinese property.
Oh.
Called Infernal Affairs.
Interesting.
Another good example of making a property work with your story. Because that took place in Hong Kong. The Departed took place in Boston.
That's fair.
Yes.
Well, like I was saying with The Parent Trap is we had It Takes Two, which is the Olsen twins basically doing Parent Trap. But and then they had the recent one with Dennis Quaid, and where they basically took The Parent Trap and just they expanded it. It's like instead of someone living in California and Boston, it was, oh, I live in California, I live in England.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
But yeah, there's a lot of good examples and bad examples.
Bad examples, yes. MIB International being a bad example.
Oh, yeah. And the more I think about it, the more it just, they had potential and they ruined it.
Hmm.
Okay. And it shows it in the box office. Nobody's gone to see it.
All right, some stuff I've been up to. Let's see. Last weekend, I was doing the volunteer thing at the airsoft field. I really like, because I get to be outside a lot. And they had one of their quote unquote world conflicts, which is their big story special event. It's interesting because I'm learning more, because it's like They really got creative because they have the, they use the field as this fictional country.
Okay.
And they have two factions. Red versus blue.
Hitting the door nail. Yeah, it's pretty.
It's red. It's essentially red versus blue. We have the different organizations. I'm not going to try and use their names because you know.
Is Master Chief out there?
No.
Okay.
Although I would love to do an airsoft helmet that looks like Spartan armor.
I would run around as your mini me.
So, they have this and they have this story. It's all right. You have these two factions. You have these militias that are of these factions, and you have these points to control, and it's all this stuff going on. And just watching everybody kind of interact, it was a lot of fun. So people I've been playing with and interacting with got to spend the second half of the day with them as they were trying to hold this bunker. And that was, it was a lot of fun there, a lot of fun seeing how the story played out, because I'd never been to one of these.
Okay.
So the first one I go to is one I'm volunteering at, and it's like, okay, I'm ready for the next one. But got to learn a lot about there. So, and of course they're doing their weekday games right now. I'll be out there again this weekend, naturally. Another thing was our episodic D&D Waterdeep adventure.
How deep did you go?
Well, what had happened was, is we were sitting.
This is about to go somewhere deeper.
We were sitting in a tavern, you see, and we met a man named Devil.
Devil.
And we made a deal with him. So yes, we made a deal with Devil.
Okay.
To go and investigate some murders.
Okay.
It's like, all right, serial killer in Waterdeep. Okay. All right. So we go and we round up our posse, and come to find out one of our party members was arrested for sleeping on a roof by the magistrate. And it's like, oh, gee. Oh, this is going to suck. But we're able to get him out, and then we go and we're spend a few days investigating. We ended up tailing this halfling that was really, really drunk, coming out of the tavern, stumbling down the street. I decided to follow because he happened to fit the profile of the serial killer.
Hey, yeah, you gotta investigate every lead.
Yeah, so it's like, all right, cool, and we go, and then all of a sudden, this drow comes running up to do the murder, and we're all trying to intervene and. Turns out he just sits there. He's a gunslinger build and just lays out everybody. And one of their party members chases him down and ends up, you know, meeting his gods. And it was just like, oh, wow. That just happened. So I actually never really been in a game where a player character was killed.
That is new.
It's traumatic, even if you're not the one. Well, I can't say that. I DM'd a game where player characters died, but that was one of those. Every time I re-envision it, I'm thinking of an Acme cartoon.
Why did I just get an image of Animaniacs right now?
Animaniacs, all of them. Hearing the player characters like, all right, I'm gonna go into the. We go into this interdimensional space. All right. I go to the second floor of this room. All right. There's a pedestal with potions. Great. I'm going to pull out my bag of holding. I'm going to take the potion, and I'm going to put it in a bag of holding. And it's that. Wait a minute. Interdimensional space. Interdimensional pocket. Oh, crap.
It's just not going to work out today.
No. It was just that. Oh.
Say your piece, my friend.
I'm done.
There we go.
So I was working that out. So now we'll have an opportunity for a new character. We did have the opportunity to try and bring him back. And I don't think their price was right. It's like they wanted to brand us as members of their organization. I'm like, yeah, I'm too much of a free spirit for that.
Yeah, I can't join you.
No. See, it's not going to work with my skin tone. I just can't do it.
I like my pizza to myself.
This is true. So that's kind of what I've been up to. I know, so exciting. But hey,
I'm jumping in my booties. It is exciting.
Yeah, rewatching some shows, but yeah. Next weekend we're gonna do Spider-Man Far From Home.
Oh yeah, and being this is the month of June, I usually put up my five films mid-season lists.
Oh.
So after this weekend, after I get one more movie in,
I'll do it.
I'll comb through what I've seen and try to figure out my best five. I don't have a top five. I do the top list at the end of the year.
Okay.
I switched it up a few years back, and I just do the best five. So there's no order, just the five films I think are the best so far.
Now, do you have five films?
I have to think about it. There's another movie coming out this weekend. Before I can really, really put a list together, I can tell you there's at least maybe two or three that will definitely be on the list.
Obviously, Toy Story 4.
Well, yeah, that one's pretty obvious.
And the other five for this year will probably be on the list too, right?
Yes.
So, Endgame. Now, if you go watch Endgame this weekend, will it get a 5.5 because it's got additional footage?
You know, that additional footage. It all depends on that additional footage. Like if it's Tony Stark snappity snap snap.
Or something. Did he stay alive?
I don't know, but you know they did say they put in a post-credit scene, so maybe it gets the 0.5 for that. I don't know.
And they had a post-credit last time. It was an audio thing. Yeah, the hammer on the anvil. We all know that. But I guess maybe now they have.
Or Doctor Doom. Oh, no one knows.
I know some friends are definitely wanting to be seeing Doctor Doom.
But we'll know more about the MCU after Spider-Man Far From Home, because Kevin Feige said he's not going to talk about anything post until after Spider-Man 4.
Yes, because it's the closing of Phase 3.
And that does look potentially good, along with a few others.
Yeah, I'm curious. They got quite a few of the Rogues Gallery in there.
Oh, yeah. Mysterio, and some rumored other ones, but we'll see.
Yeah, Hydra Man and Molten Man are both in there, because Variant Comics did their history of, or origins of.
We'll get to see them all.
Yes. Well, I think we're pretty much it. Can't think of anything. We're probably going to have some new stuff soon. I know we have another friend that wants to talk comics, so we might have his sections coming in here soon.
Comic-Con is right around the corner, so definitely having a third voice for that will help.
And San Diego Comic-Con should have some interesting stuff for the next phase of the Marvel films.
There's some stuff, there's some studios and people that pulled up, but there's a lot of others that filled right in. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
Yes, so I guess stand by to see what's going on with that. So with that, y'all have a wonderful evening. Thank you for downloading and subscribing. And give us a like, give us a review, and we'll continue to keep doing this wonderful, wonderful chit-chat we do.
Later.
Later.